Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Figured out with this thing before in the past is sometimes it kind of goes if you like change your audio input before starting the recording, it goes a bit like it's fine. I've started recording now anyway. Oh, cool. Except for why not.
Okay, I'm not too quiet now.
Pardon?
Hopefully not anyway. Oh
no, you're not at all. So, Steve Booker, how the devil are you?
Yeah, good. Yeah, obviously, we just had a little catch up before recording. Yeah, no, things are good. Obviously, just getting by in the kind of interesting time that we're all going through. You know, following good routines and trying to stay creative and motivated. And yeah, it's a bit of a bizarre time that we're in. But no, things are good. Yeah, just locked down here in Brighton.
But at least you've got the seaside next year. And I'd imagine the weather's a bit... I mean, you've had some good weather and you're still allowed out for your one token trip, I guess.
Oh, honestly, yeah, that's been unbelievable. And being by the sea has actually been incredible. So we live relatively near to the seafront. So we've been walking along there and stuff. And as I mentioned earlier, like, you know, it's good that we've still got cycling. So I've been kind of getting out and early mornings and going for little rides, obviously not too long, but solo rides and stuff, which is something I'm extremely thankful that we're still able to do.
It makes a massive difference, doesn't it? Like, I mean, it's funny. Mm-hmm. I started this podcast when I was in Spain and we were going into lockdown. It's been such a topic off the every episode now. This will be episode 16.
Yeah.
16 episodes, and it comes up in every single episode around the world, which is like is fascinating. Like to look back on, it's really, really interesting.
Yeah.
Especially when I've spoken to people in America, Australia, like people across the globe who are like how different countries are dealing with it. And I don't know. This weekend, I don't know about where you are, but where I am this weekend, there was definitely a noticeable amount of people that were not paying attention to.
Yeah, 100%. It's definitely, I think it's got to that point where people have been locked down now for such a long period. They're almost like, oh, I'm kind of done with it now. Do you know what I mean? And I think they're starting to not listen again.
Yes.
And definitely, I mean, like I said, I'm down by the beach and stuff. And I think that people, you know, there's been people chilling, having barbecues and hanging out and sunbathing and stuff. And I'm like, guys, you know that like everything is still going on, right? We're not on a holiday kind of thing.
Yeah.
We shouldn't be chilling. Like we should still be listening to what we're being advised to do and stuff. But yeah, definitely the last week I've noticed, you know, it's been busier down on the seafront and in kind of the, yeah, those areas basically. But
I noticed it because I live right next to a park. Mm. And I can see the park from where my flat is. When I walk out my front door,
yeah,
I can see into the park, and it's a really nice park. It's got like table tennis, football,
nice.
Like kids play area, but it's got volleyball court.
Yeah,
there's why, but there's a volleyball court there.
Yeah,
and like climbing walls and stuff like that. And I looked over there on Saturday, I think it was, and I was like, there's a load of people having a barbecue, there's a group of people getting drunk, there's a group of mates hanging out on the climbing walls, there's a group of mates playing volleyball. You don't look like you're from the same household or the same family.
Definitely.
Yeah, there's not many places in Shoreditch that can fit 8 people in, I'll tell you that.
exactly. I've even seen it with cycling as well. Obviously people have been going out and riding together, and I'm like, I don't think you're all like 9-10 of you are from the same household. I could be wrong, but I don't think that is a thing. But
yeah. I saw one of the guy I know said that he saw a group of like club riders all going out together in their club kit.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
I mean, come on, it's so obvious, isn't it?
I know, but also I don't get it. It's we're all in the same boat. Like everyone is kind of needs to abide by the rules that have been set for us, and you know, we should be thankful, like I said earlier, like we should be thankful that we are still able to go out and cycle and have that as an exercise that we can do. So I guess for me, I see it as a little bit selfish because you're kind of just going to ruin it for everyone else. You know, you don't want it to be taken away. So, you know, we're lucky that we can still go out and ride solo and enjoy that. For me, it's been, you know, as I said, like it's been a huge thing whilst being locked down. It's like getting out and kind of clearing my mind and going out as cycling normally does. You know, it's just having that bit of freedom and thinking space to kind of go out and, you know, chill and take it all in and be away from anyone else and stuff like that. But
gets to a point, doesn't it, where you just need to, when you've been stuck in home for so long, where you just need to escape a bit.
Definitely.
Yeah, I definitely feel that. Like I get proper stir crazy and I'm like, what the fuck? I need to get out of this place.
Yeah. Although I am very thankful to have an indoor trainer as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, God. Yeah. I've got this thing about like, right, I feel a bit guilty about riding longer than more than like an hour outside.
Yeah, me too. I feel exactly the same. I think the longest ride I've done outside has been a couple of hours, and it's been, you know, I've gone out very, very early and I've changed my normal routes to routes that are kind of a bit more out there. And, you know, like on those routes I've done, I haven't really seen hardly any people. And I was like, okay, well, that should be okay. But you just got to gauge, haven't you? But I definitely think that I'd feel super guilty going out all day on a big long ride and kind of taking food and stuff with me. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I completely agree.
You know, that's just how I feel about it. But
turbo trainers are good now. Things like Zwift and stuff, it makes a massive difference, I think.
Oh, definitely. And also I've been doing these kind of like meetups and stuff and, you know, joining the Giro meetup and stuff like that. And it's been great because, you know, obviously it's not the same as riding with mates. It's definitely not. But you're still able to, you know, chat to people online and, you know, and ride with people. And yeah, that's been really cool. I love that feature that Zwift do. It's great.
Yeah. I mean, I looked the other day, I've been using Zwift since 2016.
Yeah, that's crazy, man. Yeah.
Yeah, it came out in 2014.
Yeah, definitely. I think I've been using it for the last year, you know?
Yeah, and it's just like, there is loads of other equivalents out there. Sure. There's other brands that do the same thing. Ruvi, Road Grand Tours, Be Cool do something. Like, there's loads of other ones, but Zwift is definitely the dominant force.
Yeah,
definitely.
Really, yeah.
Yeah. You know, you look at the kind of the races they're doing, the pros they've got on there. Like, it's pretty nuts. Like, it's good. Like, the changes I've seen in it since I've used it are pretty mad, actually. Like, they've done well out of me. 2016, 4 years of usage. Yeah.
Yeah, that's cool.
You know. Yeah. So, you're still quite a new cyclist, really, aren't you?
Hmm. Yeah, it's probably been 18 months now, I think, I've been cycling. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so coming up to 2 years. I think I've done like, I don't know, 7,000 Ks all time or something. So I'm still extremely new to cycling for sure. Yeah, but obviously I got bitten by the bug and, you know, the kind of rest is history, really. Yeah, I absolutely love it.
Yeah, I saw you just sold.
Yeah.
Your curve though.
Yeah.
Because you've got a new one coming though?
Yes, yeah. So I just sold my curve, my Belgidis V2, and I've got a V3 on the way, which I'm extremely excited about. Because I'm doing some different bits with this one and the build and stuff like that than I did before. So I'm so excited about that. Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
I remember when you got your first one because you went to see Tim, does my fits, and that was cool to watch and follow, really cool. But then since then you've had the Belgian V2 and you've got Kevin as well, haven't you?
Kevin is still, so Curve are great. They you know, really looked after me and stuff, and I've become good friends with those guys, and obviously Jordan at Giro and stuff, they're kind of, all those guys are kind of, I guess, as a new cyclist, taking me under their wings and, you know, looked after me and showed me the way and stuff like that, which has been great. And then I kind of built up the steel bike, the Kevin of Steel the GXR that they do last year, and then went on like an expedition out to South Africa and Lesotho, which was that was a tough trip.
It looked amazing.
Yeah, but absolutely incredible. Yeah, incredible. Yeah, some of the hardest riding I've ever experienced, and which made me feel good because a lot of the people that had been cycling for years and years that were on the trip as well, they also thought it was quite tough. So I was like, okay, it's not just me. Like, I think it's just actually quite tough. But it was great. Yeah, it was amazing. Kind of, obviously we did Sandy Pass, which is an amazing kind of unpaved kind of gravel climb from South Africa into the border of Lesotho, which was, yeah, crazy. But yeah, amazing, amazing trip. Yeah.
So what do you prefer, road or off-road, from your experience so far?
Oh, I don't know. I think because I'm so new to I tell you what I love about off-road. I love the fact that I was carrying all of my stuff and it did feel like proper adventure. Do you know what I mean? Like, you're off-grid, you know, you're not following really nice roads. It's a different thing, isn't it? You know what I mean? Like, I feel like at the end of the day, I feel like you earn your rest, if you know what I mean. Because you're kind of like, it was just hard, you know. There's so many more factors I think you have to think about. You know, when you're riding on the road and it's lovely tarmac, you can just zip along and kind of, it's almost, you go into autopilot a little bit. Obviously, you're still aware of what's going on around you, but you haven't got to really think about the road changing too much. You've got to watch out for potholes and things on the road, obviously. But when it's off-road and you're riding on gravel and you've kind of got big boulders the size of like little baby heads or whatever, you know, you've got to pay attention, and mentally it's quite draining that way. So it's just different. It's fun. It's technical. It's, you know, it's challenging. And I think, yeah, it just feels like adventure, if you know what I mean, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I really enjoy riding off-road. It reminds me of being a kid.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely.
Like, when I was a kid, I used to do a lot of like mountain biking, and I used to do mountain biking and BMXing basically all the time. And because where my mum lives is like basically in deepest, darkest Kent, and she's right next to this big forest. Mm-hmm. And in the forest was like, there was an airfield near there called King's Hill.
Oh, okay.
And King's Hill, it was like one of the major airfields flying out of Kent that would go over for the Second World War. And the whole area, so where she lives in a village called Merriworth. Mm. Merriworth and Westmorland and King's Hill was all really heavily bombed.
Right.
But just because it was an airfield.
Yeah.
But it meant that in the woods, in the forest, there's like loads of like bomb craters.
Yeah.
As a kid, I used to just go, I didn't really think anything of it. You go bounding in and out and jumping out of them. So I have like a big, like, reminiscent sort of feeling with off-road riding now to that. Although my crash record is also very good at riding off-road, as in I keep crashing and destroying bikes. I mean, I've done the last two like off-road races I've done, I've managed to total the bikes, so
blimey. Yeah, wow.
Yeah, which is always a concern, but like, one was neither were my fault, really. They were both like just unlucky incidences. Yeah. One was a mechanical, basically the brake failed, and one of them I hit some really rough stuff and just went straight over the bars. That was in Morocco. That was the one that jarred my back out.
That was the most recent one, right?
Yeah, that was, were we, February, end of February? Well, no, mid-February, actually.
Yeah, wow.
Pretty nice to think. It's like crazy to think that was this year, to be honest with you, in the current situation.
Cool. And so much has changed since then, right?
The podcast that's before this one is a guy called John Woodruff, who is a guy that I was out there with. And have done, I did Atlas Mountains with him, and I did Silk Road the same year as him. And we were just chatting about like how fucking bonkers it was. Like, he's an American living in Holland. Yeah. So he's got like, he's just a fascinating character as well. Like, just interesting stories that come from him. Yeah. So yeah, you've really like, the cycling bug has proper bitten you. And I guess that's come from Did it kind of, would you say it came through Jordan mainly?
Yeah, do you know, so how I really got into it is like, okay, so I've always like loved the idea of cycling. So similar to you, when I was a kid, you know, I used to do loads of BMXing and loads of mountain biking. So I used to, you know, summer holidays, I used to live in Surrey, and there was like local kind of dirt jumps in Wisley around the corner from us. And we used to ride there every day in the summer. And kind of ride those jumps and stuff. So it's always been something that I've really been into. And then as I kind of got a bit older, I kind of, I guess, lost the passion for it and didn't carry on with BMXing or mountain biking. And then, you know, I've loved the idea of kind of road cycling and getting into it and never really took the plunge. Obviously, it's a relatively expensive sport, so I didn't really commit to it. And then, you know, I was not in a great place in terms of fitness and, you know, where I was at with just being happy in that kind of stuff. Like I put on a lot of weight and stuff like that. And it was something that I used to help me with that, you know. So for me, it was that I dropped a lot of weight cycling. That's kind of really what got me into it. But yeah, through Jordan, obviously I've known Jordan at Giro before the cafe and stuff like that, so we've known each other for years and then become a lot closer through cycling. But like I said, you know, really helped me out and kind of put me in the right direction in terms of bikes and, you know, how I should be riding and loads of different tips and stuff to kind of get into it. So yeah, for me it was more a case of like, I love the idea of cycling, and I obviously had a passion for it when I was a teenager and stuff like that. And mm-hmm. then kind of thought, do you know what? I'm going to go for it. I'm going to kind of commit to it and use it as a way to hopefully lose weight. And then from there, it kind of, you know, it changed my life quite a bit, actually, in that way. I went from being relatively unhappy with, you know, appearance and where I was fitness wise to then, you know, having this kind of thing that I was so, and still am, you know, extremely passionate about and look forward to riding my bike and the adventures that I've kind of can go on and do with it. And then I guess, you know, mental health wise, it's my escape. You know what I mean? It's where I go to kind of clear my mind, like I was kind of saying earlier. So yeah, it sounds a bit cliche, but it's completely changed my life in that way. You know, it's my release. It's what I do to, you know, clear my mind, really, is the only way I can explain it. And also ride with friends and have amazing experiences. You know, like I'm a massive advocate for cycling. I'm always trying to get people on bikes just because of, you know, I guess my experience. But yeah.
It's pretty special, isn't it? Like I'm like the mental health side of it is, I know a lot of people talk about it, but I think there's a lot of people that don't realize it.
Really?
And it's, you know, what you're saying about how it's helped you lose weight as well, like very similar with me. Like my largest I was 120 kilos.
Yeah.
I'm now 77 right now, which is a bit bigger than I have been. That's a little bit heavier than I have been in the past, but I'm allowed to put on a bit of weight every now and then.
Absolutely. I'm not, yeah. 120 to 77 is still pretty insane. I was at like 106, I think, at my max. And then, you know, it's weird, isn't it? You kind of, when you look back at kind of images or whatever, where you were in that place, it's hard to understand where your mind's at when you're actually in that moment. Do you know what I mean?
Definitely.
You look back, like I look back at photos and I look back at videos or whatever, because obviously for me, like I've documented quite a lot of my life over the last 8 years. So I can look back at videos and I can look back at images and stuff like that and be like, wow, not only was I like, I didn't know I was there. Do you know what I mean? I didn't understand that I was at that place. It's not until you look back that you go, I was actually really unhappy there as well. Like it was not a great time in my life. So yeah, it's interesting, isn't it?
So as you say, we look at like social media now and you say your life has been very much, YouTube was kind of where you started, wasn't it?
Yeah. So I kind of started, a YouTube channel was a bit of a creative outlet, really. So my background is like photography and graphic design. So I used to work at Apple at graphic design and kind of stopped that job to pursue, I guess, a online social media wave that was kind of coming. So yeah, like I said, I started a YouTube channel. Like we basically how it started was me and some friends. We had a bit of a challenge of like, okay, who can get a million views on YouTube? That was how it started. And you know, one of my friends uploaded it. This is back in the day when YouTube obviously is dramatically different to what it is now. All it was was like fail videos and cat videos and shock videos, like stuff like that.
But isn't that what it all is still?
I mean, yeah, to some extent. There is some pretty decent content on there now. And, you know, I mean, I'll get onto it. But, you know, like when I told people that I had a YouTube channel and explained to them that was my job, they were like, so what do you actually do? You know, that was always the kind of response I got. But yeah, so we kind of had this challenge. My friend uploaded a cover, I can't remember what song it was, but he covered a well-known song and it got like 80,000 views.
Wow. Okay.
Back then that was like, you know, that's like a million views kind of thing. Like that's was insane. Like we're like, what the hell? And it still is a substantial amount of views. But we're like, what the hell? Okay. So we need to club together and try and figure out how we can do this. Anyway, so we started a channel with my friend and whatever. And I won't go into what it was or whatever, but we managed to build up a channel that was kind of gaining millions and millions of views. And then off the back of that, obviously I saw that it was a thing. Do you know what I mean? Like I saw that it was a viable thing that you could potentially make money out of. And I thought that it was just going to get more widespread. Anyway, so fast forward, I started my channel as a bit of a kind of outlet and I've always been into, you know, like kind of fashion and travel and stuff like that. And kind of, you know, I was kind of keen to make my channel around what I was passionate about, just because then I thought like, I'm actually going to want to make videos. I'm actually going to, you know, want to put the time into it on the side kind of thing.
Yeah. It makes a lot of sense.
Say again. Yeah. Because I couldn't talk about something or I couldn't explain to people about something that I didn't enjoy. Do you know what I mean? Like I don't think I could do that. Anyway, so yeah, I started a blog and started a YouTube channel and it started to get traction and stuff like that. And then I guess like fast forward a few years, I built up, a few thousand subscribers and followers across other networks and stuff like that. And then it was at a crossroads where I was like kind of working for myself on other bits and then had this social media kind of thing I was doing on the side. And I'm like, well, I'm now making money from it, but I'm also spreading myself so thin doing this and my other day job. And I basically just was like, I'm going to go for it. If I'm going to do it, now's the time. I'm going to go for it and see if I can make it into a full-time living and full-time wage kind of thing. And I remember like having chats with like family and friends and then be like, are you sure? You know, because back then it was just so different to what it is now. You tell people now about YouTube, you tell people now about social media, you know, most people like you ask, you know, 18 or like, okay, 13 to 21 year olds, they probably want to do something within social media, you know? But back then it wasn't like that. It was like, you're having to really explain to people like how it works money wise and how, what you actually do and stuff. So, so back then it was a bit like hard for friends and family to go, well, you've got a good thing going, what you're doing with your day job. Are you sure you want to do this? Are you sure you want to do this? And that just kind of went for it. You know, I took the risk and then, you know, fortunately it's worked out and I've been kind of doing this now for 8 years and seen, I guess, the industry like, you know, adapt and develop and change, you know, lots since I've been doing it. So yeah, I feel, you know, I've worked super hard at it and put a lot of effort into it. But I feel fortunate to be doing what I'm doing. Absolutely.
Yeah. We've spoken a few times about, cause I've had a lot of people ask me to do a YouTube channel and we've spoken about it quite a few times and I've continually insisted on not doing it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then I remember I came to you and said like, look, I think I'm going to do a podcast.
Yeah.
And I justified it to you by saying, I don't watch a lot of YouTube videos. Yeah. So what's the point of me doing something that I'm not actively investing myself into? And I said to you, in contrast, I listen to a shit ton of podcasts. Mm-hmm. So, and for me, like, I have a hell of a lot of respect for people that do the kind of thing you do, what Francis does, know, the creativity in it, the quality of the footage is, you know, the stuff that you're seeing now in some people on YouTube, they're like films. It's literally like watching films. It's beautiful. And I massively, and I have a huge amount of respect and admiration for that. Mm-hmm. But for me, I'm not invested in it. And also it's a bit too much of an eyesight into my private life. I'm quite a private person in reality. And I've seen how Francis particularly does struggle with it at points. So ironically, the podcast after this one will be with Francis.
Oh yeah, really?
Intentionally. Yeah. So, I mean, for me, it's like, I think you tapped into it bang on the right time.
Mm.
Well, you were there at the real start of where it was starting to go. And similarly with Francis, he was cycling blogging. He was probably one of the first.
Yeah, totally.
You know, there was a couple of others around when he sort of started, but he was probably one of the first to do it in the style that he's done it in, which is really, you know, huge credit to what he's done. But like, for me, what's fascinating is seeing the quality of the creativity that's coming out of it. And like with you, you've traveled around the world, you've done some amazing things, and you've been able to show those and share those stories to thousands and thousands of people.
Like I said, I feel, you know, very, very fortunate to be doing what I'm doing. It's interesting what you said about, obviously you live, you know, you're quite a private person, so bringing people in, it's a hard thing, and like I can totally relate with that, you know. I think that it does affect you, like when you are sharing things that are personal to you, or you're bringing people in to comment on how you live your life, or you know, things like I don't know, what you eat and what you get up to, like with my wife or dogs or family and friends and stuff, and then you bring friends into that, and then you give people the ability to comment on your friend's appearance or how they, you know, think of them and stuff like that. So it definitely is a fine line of, like, I've definitely over the years wanted to share less. And also, like, if I'm not feeling like I want to film, or I'm having a down day, like back in the day when I was like on the grind of like making videos and getting it out there and, you know, trying to build up traction stuff, I would just, you know, overlook that and just go, yep, got to get it out, got to do this, you know, got to pump it out kind of thing. Whereas now I'm like, do you know what? I don't want to do that. And I don't want to film this. I just want to experience it myself. So like for me, I absolutely treat it as a job. So, you know, I definitely have a really personal relationship with people that follow me, you know, and they've been following me now for quite a long time. And I'm very thankful for that. But at the same time, you know, it is the way I make money. It is my full-time living. And also I am a human and a person off of social media as well. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I try to, you know, treat it as a job and not, like, for instance, I am the version of myself online, but I'm also a lot more than just the person that you see in my videos and, you know, on Instagram or whatever. Like, I go through the same stuff that everyone else goes through, the struggles that everyone else goes through, kind of thing. So it's just limiting, I guess, what you're bringing people in for, but then also, you know, you want to give them a real insight into what you get up to and how you feel about certain things. So
It's interesting, isn't it? Because like, you see so often in social media people talk about how it's very curated and very, you know, people only allow you to see what you want them to see, which is completely understandable.
Yeah.
But there's like two or three like flips on that. Part of that is that's great because you're keeping part of your life private into yourself, which is I think is very important. Like, I don't share everything on mine, and believe it or not, I'm quite open on my social media, but there's a lot of stuff going on behind the scenes I don't share.
Yeah, totally.
But on the flip side, like, some people argue that actually being open and honest about certain things is really good because people really absorb and buy into that. Like,
yeah, and also, you know, I guess if you've got a voice and you can, people can relate to a situation that you're going through or have been through, and it helps someone else. Like, I've had plenty of messages. For instance, the whole cycling thing is a prime example. You know, I went from, you know, similar to yourself, you know, being unhappy and not being in a great way physically. And I've had loads of messages about people asking tips, and like, oh, how did you know, it feels like it's a big mountain that you need to climb, and I've messaged them back, and you know, obviously this is not public, this is direct messages or whatever. But hearing stuff like that is amazing, because you're like, look, I can relate to that. I've been there, you know, it's tough and you will get through it. You just need to be motivated and hold on to these little things and stuff. So for me, my ultimate goal is that if I can inspire people to get out there and ride a bike, or whether it's running, or, you know, whether it's stay at, kind of keeping active to help them in their day to day, or whether it's going out to take photos, or, you know, styling a certain outfit to make them feel better, you know, like all that kind of stuff is my goal, really. It's when you get messages like that, you're like, that's all that matters. You know what I mean?
100% agree with you. Like, similarly, I get quite a lot of messages like that, and I, every single time, I'm a little bit taken back by it, because I always just feel like, hey, I'm just a dude.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely.
But it's incredibly heartwarming that people feel that they can reach out and ask. And to be like, in contrast to you, I all I do is ride my bike really on and post pictures of pretty bikes on Instagram and then talk bollocks to people on this. That's pretty much it. And this is new. Like, I'm not, you know, you've got your website, your own design stuff, your photography, YouTube, your two YouTube accounts, two Instagram accounts, Tumblr, Twitter. Is there any social media you haven't ticked off yet?
Do you know what? I did actually start a TikTok account recently.
Steve.
I've been like holding off on, you know, I'm a 31-year-old man. It does feel a little bit like I'm a bit disconnected with that platform. So we'll see how that goes. But actually, you know, you just reeled off all of the social networks pretty much. I probably only actually use, you know, YouTube, Instagram, over all of those, to be honest with you. You know, back in the day, I used to be on the grind of like updating all of them and kind of, you know, trying to work out the best way to grow on all of the networks and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, it's changed so much now. Like, obviously, back when I started, like Instagram, you could only upload one by one ratio video photos. So you could only upload photos, and then now it's, you've got stories, now you've got IGTV, now you've got, you know, you can upload videos in the feed and stuff like that. So it's all developing. So you have to kind of change and adapt with it. So, you know, I mainly stick to, my website, Instagram and YouTube, really. Like, my main YouTube account, I haven't uploaded in months and months. So I'm kind of, you know, like I said, I've been doing it such a long time. So I'm kind of wanting to reconnect with that audience that I've built up there. And, you know, I've changed over the last 8 years. What do I want to put out here now? What do you guys want to see, kind of thing? So I'm kind of, you know, looking to relaunch my main account. But sometimes it is like you just reeled off that. Like, you know, I'm like, I can't be keeping all of those up to date all the time.
It's funny. Like, Pinterest is one. Yeah. I've got massive Pinterest following.
Yeah, really?
Yeah, from architecture days.
Oh, of course, yeah.
Yeah, like literally, like, gets 15,000 monthly viewers. Yeah. I'm just looking at it right now. It's 15,000.
No way, that's crazy.
And it just because when I worked in architecture and design, I used to use Pinterest so much for finding inspiration.
Yeah.
And I used to pin stuff into folders all the time.
Yeah. And
it just grew like mad. I haven't posted anything on it in ages.
Yeah.
Like, but it,
I haven't really thought about Pinterest in a long time.
No, I literally do nothing on it now.
Yeah, crazy.
I think I like changed my profile photo last year on it for probably because it was like a photo of me when I was big and fat, and I was like, I've actually put this on me. But it's literally I'm looking at it right now.
Yeah,
15,000 really. Monthly views. It's nuts, isn't it? Things like that.
Yeah,
and then I hate Twitter.
Yeah, Twitter's a funny one. Yeah, it's a funny one. To be honest with you, you know, how I kind of started all my networks, like YouTube was the main platform. That was the number one. And to some extent, like it still is. And all of the other platforms like Twitter, like Instagram, Facebook, everything like that, they were all just update platforms where you would tell people to go and check out the video. That's how it worked back in the day. And this is, you know, before Instagram was what it is. But like having them develop, like you said, like the idea of keeping them all up to date now, like Tumblr, you mentioned, I've not logged into my Tumblr in over a year at minimum. Do you know what I mean? Probably a couple of years.
I've got a Tumblr somewhere and it's probably a couple of years as well.
So it's funny. Yeah, it's funny because I'm like, wow, yeah, I forgot that I used to do all of that and do it all. But like I said, you just used to feed content into those platforms to promote videos. That's all it used to be. But now it's changed, like almost like Instagram is almost competing with YouTube now, you know? So you've got to kind of roll with how the platforms change because it's all still so infant. Do you know what I mean? Like it's all still such a young industry that's kind of developing and stuff. And it's interesting. Like even from when I started to now, the change has been dramatic, like so crazy. So I'd love to see what happens in the next 5 to 10 years and how the whole social media influencer kind of develops and changes, really. So
it's a weird time right now, isn't it? Because it, as you say, it's so there's not, you know, they haven't quite like really worked out how to manage it properly. You know, we both work with brands. People do often, you know, people asking question like who you work with, are you paid, all that kind of thing. It's at the moment, like the laws are just not quite,
yeah,
haven't been refined and finalized well enough, in my opinion. I know you do as well. Try and be as open as and as clear as possible.
Yeah,
you can be, but obviously there's times where you realize that maybe you aren't as clear as you possibly can be. But without probably saying like X paid for me to do this, like.
It's a difficult one because obviously like everyone's in different positions in what industry they're in, what with social media, everyone, some people are managed, some people aren't, you know, so some people are trying to package up ads as original stuff, which I think is completely incorrect. And you should declare everything that you do because you're kind of just trying to set a standard for the industry. Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
And I'm talking about the social, not cycling. I'm talking about the social media industry as a whole. So obviously we have like the ASA, who are the advertising standards that, you know, set the rules basically on what you can and can't do advertising wise. So, but it's still, you know, it's still a little bit of the Wild West. Like some people just do what they want and it will just be like until they get found out, you know, there's nothing you can do about it. I try to be as open and honest with my audience as I can. So if I'm getting paid for something, I will declare that I'm getting paid for it by putting ad or whatever. You know, so I think that's important because also it's like, it's making people understand that, you know, this is my job and I'm getting paid for it and I'm happy to put ad because the brand that I'm working with, I'm a massive fan of, or, you know, I thought that we could, you know, make some stuff together that would benefit my audience, you know, that you could get something out of it as well. Like, I do think that, you know, branded stuff and working with brands, like I get excited about that content. You know, I get excited about working with brands that I love. And I don't think people understand, like, I handpick that, you know, the amount of stuff that I turn down is insane. Yeah. You know, I probably, and I said this on the podcast I was on with Jordan, like I probably take on 30% of what comes into my inbox, you know, very selective on who I work with and the type of work that I do. Like, I think some people, I'm going into a, probably a different thing here that you asked, but you know, I think some people think that when you do or you work with a brand, they're like, oh, they've just told you to do this and they've just told you to do that. Whereas like when the content goes out and it's a branded thing, like I've worked so hard on that and, you know, worked with the brand to try and make the best content I can for people to enjoy.
Very much. This is a good tangent to go because I am with you with this.
Yeah. And I just think that's, I think some people think that like, oh, you've just banged that out or like, that's what they've told you. I'm like, no, I've gone back and forth with the brand and said, this is what will work. Like, I know my audience, you know, I would only do it if it's this way kind of thing. You know what I mean? Like, I have normally when I work with brands, I have complete creative control. Otherwise I wouldn't agree to work with them.
Mm-hmm, so, exactly.
Yeah. But that's what I'm like anyway. You know, I definitely, and I'm proud to work with the brands that I work with. And I'm sure you are as well, you know?
Yeah. Like, I mean, when for me the big one, like I, for me personally, it's always been about trying to create long-term relationships.
Yeah,
because it's much more honest. And like, you know, I've been wearing Atticus kit since they started.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah,
I've been using Shimano components pretty much my whole life on a bike.
Yeah,
and then Cervelo, that one is new to this year, and that's one that has. Everyone who knows me knows that they've been my favorite bike brand for 15 years. Mate, it's massive. I'm still pinch myself every day about it. Like, and I have, and same thing. I don't think people understand or realize the people. This is a slight vent because I got a bit frustrated over the weekend by a message. as you do, but people don't. People see the nice side of it, like you're being provided with a beautiful bike, for example. Mm-hmm. But in reality, they don't know what's gone on behind the scenes to make that happen.
Yeah.
Weekly phone calls, emails, discussions, planning things for the next 5-6 months,
actually,
a year in fact, in advance. The side projects that come off that, like there's a lot of other things that go on, and it's quite, and you know yourself, it is a job in its own right. Looking, you know, working with brands and collaborating and creating, mm-hmm. being creative and creating, being a creative person in its own right is very mentally taxing.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I totally agree, you know, absolutely. I think that, and I'm sure it's the same for you, you know, I put so much effort into, you know, wanting to work with the right brands, and you know, I care about the message that I'm putting out to my audience, because if I'm I guess influencing them to think a certain way or have a certain opinion of a brand, I want that to be correct, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And it's subjective, like it's that's my opinion, but if people are taking that and you know, going, oh, okay, they're cool, I haven't heard of them before, or like, oh, I like those guys, now I like them a bit more because I've seen this content kind of thing. So you've got to be, for me, I'm you know, I only really want to be promoting stuff that I love and I genuinely enjoy, and brands that I respect and want to work with, you know. I think that's it's not just about the, I guess, the number that you're getting paid or whatever it is. It's more about like, oh, is this collaboration going to work? Is there synergy between what I do and what they do? And can we create something for the audience that is cool? Like for me, I think there's a sweet spot that exists when it comes to collaborating with brands. I think that you can really enjoy it as a creator and get excited about working the brand. The brand can, you know, really enjoy it and get great content and collaboration with you. And then the viewer can get an amazing amount of enjoyment out of the content and something out of it. Do you know what I mean? It's that kind of like triangle of the three kind of parties all benefiting from it. And I think if you get that right, that is how a great collaboration works, you know?
And that's how you make long-term relationships.
Yeah, definitely. And I think that's also what I've always tried to do is, you know, not just go, oh, I'm working with this brand this week and this brand this week. You know, mm-hmm. I've always, whenever a brand has approached me, I've always been like, why don't we do something for a longer amount of time? I'd love to continue to work with you. And it's just trying to find ways that works, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But yeah. But also, I think some people think that you get everything for free as well.
Yeah.
I honestly pay for most of the things that I get. I mean, prime example is I've bought all my bikes. I've done everything like that. But outside of cycling as well, like, because I do a lot of style related stuff. People are like, oh, you just get free clothes. I'm like, no, I buy a lot of that stuff myself. Like I buy a lot of it myself because I want to support those independent brands. You know what I mean? And I earn money to be able to do that kind of thing. So.
Yeah, exactly. People, mate, my expenditure on bike stuff is ridiculous. People perceive that I get a lot for free. Fucking hell. You don't want to know what my monthly outgoings is on my things. It's disgusting. And it actually, like, prime example is, like, if I see a prime example, this is a real prime example.
Yeah, yeah.
So there's a Cervelo frame, which I've lusted over, lusted over it for years. Came out in 2018. Mm-hmm. It's the Classics Edition R5. I've even spoken about it on a podcast with the designers of the bike.
Yeah, really?
Yeah, mate, I was just geeking out so much. I've lusted over one of these bikes, yeah? There's none in stock in Europe.
Yeah.
They're they were limited edition. None in stock in Europe. So I've been toying with the idea of buying one for 2 years now,
Mm-hmm.
And so the advantage of working with Cervelo is I've been able to go, do you know there's any of these in Europe?
Yeah.
Come out of a response saying, no, that's great. I need it in this size. Do you know there's any in Europe? No, there isn't.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Do you know there's any of that size in America?
Yeah, really?
Yeah. And they were like, there might be one. Try this store, this store, this store. No idea if they can ship them to the UK. We obviously can't give you one because of, like, they're sold products. But, you might be able to find them in this store.
Uh-huh.
So the advice they gave me pointed to me towards a bike shop in New York, which happened to have one size 54 classic edition Cervelo R5 in stock.
Yeah.
I bought it.
Did you?
It was a lot of money and I had to pay import tax on it.
Yeah, of course.
I don't need it. I've just wanted one for so long that I just thought.
But that's awesome, though. I love that. I'm quite similar in that way. I feel like all the money I earn now is to spend on bike stuff. And I'm constantly trying to justify to my wife, being like, oh, listen, I know I bought this time, but actually I found this and I think it'd be good for this. And da, 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 do you know what I mean? So you're kind of, well, for me, I'm trying to justify it, but she's great. She definitely is extremely tolerant of my bike buying habits.
It's addictive, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. But you know, when you're passionate about something like that, that's what you should be investing in, I guess. Like I said, I get, we can relate. You get so much out of it. You know, when you put money into it, it's like, oh, I know I'm going to, you know, I'm going to have this or I'm going to enjoy this. And it's a good investment kind of thing from that
point. I always think of it as like how, like, we've specifically, like, with this R5.
Yeah.
Wanted one of these since it was released, and they released it as a limited edition. I think they only released like 400 of them, maybe.
Yeah, wow, that's not a lot.
Maybe I wouldn't even be surprised if it's a lot less than that, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
And when it first came out, I very nearly bought it, and I don't know what. And something in me told me not to buy it, and I think it was like just stability with work, all that kind of thing.
Yeah.
2 years ago. And I was looking on Sigma Sports to keep an eye on the stock for ages. And then then they sold out of 54s, and I was just like, fuck, I missed it.
Yeah.
And then it was purely after the podcast I did with them, I was like, I've got to try and get one.
Oh, so it's super recent then?
Yeah, I ordered it last week.
Oh, no way, that's crazy.
Yeah. So it's going to, I don't know where it's going to turn up. It's coming from the States, so we'll find out. They're super rare. Like, you just don't see them.
That's cool.
But that's like an example of where you really love a brand and you know, you want to get behind it as well. Sure. But one question I had for you was, which I meant to ask ages ago, where do you, because you're very, very privileged to have seen so much of the world. And like, if there was one place you could tell me to go to,
oh,
where would it be?
Would riding come into it?
No, doesn't have to.
Okay. Where would I recommend? Oh man, that's very, very hard. Okay, this might be an obvious one, but it's somewhere that I've always gone back to, and for me it has like definitely a place in my heart. Iceland. Unbelievable. Have you been?
Never been.
Oh, okay. Perfect then. Yeah, I would always recommend anyone to go to Iceland. Like if you're, and even for cycling, man, like it's amazing for cycling. They've obviously, they do that gravel race over there. I think it's called the Rift or something like that.
Yeah, it's been on my radar, that one.
Yeah, I'd like to do that one actually.
Organised by Lauf, isn't it? Lauf.
Yeah. I actually think Tim's, I think he's in it. I think he's doing it if it doesn't get postponed.
Yeah, he is. He is, yeah.
But no, Iceland, man. Like I've been there. You know, obviously I'm a photographer and stuff. And I think from that point of view, it's unbelievable. If you like shooting vast kind of crazy landscapes, it's the place to go. And even if you're not a photographer, you know, to see what Iceland has to offer in terms of those landscapes, it is super special. You know, I think it's, I don't know how to explain it. Like it's just so overwhelming. Like that's the only real word that I've got for it. You know, you're kind of, the landscape is, you'd think that it'd be quite like basic because of like in the winter, it's like white, completely white, but it's actually unbelievable. The greens are just like unbelievably rich. You know, the natural kind of geysers that they have over there, like the stuff like that is, you know, it's amazing. Like and the people are super nice, and it's just every time I've been there, I've even gone back to the similar spots and same spots that I've gone to, and it's different every time. It's honestly been different every time because, you know, you'll drive through Iceland. So the first trip I went on, we kind of went up to the north and stuff, and I'm not kidding you, we went through every single weather condition you can imagine. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like it was nuts. So it's just a crazy place. If you like kind of rugged, you know, cold and I guess vast landscapes and unique, very, very unique scenery. It's incredible. Yeah.
Every time I've seen photos of it, I've just been like, shit, yeah. I need to go there. There was a video which was shot with, do you know who Jeremy Powers is?
I don't know.
But Jeremy Powers is like a former US cyclocross champion.
Oh, yeah.
Really famous like cyclocross racer. Like really nice guy. He's now a presenter for GCN as well.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
But he used to be sponsored by a bike brand called Focus.
Sure.
Who's another bike brand I really love. I think they make great bikes.
Yeah.
And he, they released a bike called the Paralane, which was like the first kind of gravel bike that Focus did. And it was a bit of ahead of its time, to be honest, as a gravel bike came. It sort of came when the gravel riding kind of started off.
Mm-hmm.
It's a really cool bike. But they did a video with Jeremy Powers riding around Iceland on this Paralane bike.
Yeah.
And I saw that video and I was just like, shit, that looks like incredible. And then there was the Rift race.
Yeah.
Iceland, which is 200K gravel racing, which looks amazing. And
yeah.
Everything I've seen from it, like it's somewhere that it's good that you mentioned that because it's been on my list.
Yeah.
I'll definitely reinforce it on that list now.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah. And also because obviously being in the UK, it's actually very accessible for us. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Maybe not now on the current situation we've got going on. But you know, flights are relatively cheap there, and you know, Iceland is extremely expensive. But getting there is pretty cheap. And you can do it, you know, in different ways that you're not spending an arm and a leg kind of thing. But I will say one other place because like it's probably tied. Another place would be Alberta, Canada, which
okay.
It is incredible, yeah. So they've got a like national park. It's the Icefields Parkway, and I've done a road trip along there in summer and in winter. And I'd actually like to ride that. It'd be incredible. So they've got like the classics, which are like Peyto Lake, Lake Moraine, Lake Louise, basically all the lakes. but it goes from, I believe, I could be wrong on this, but it goes from Calgary all the way through to Jasper. And I can't remember how long it is, but oh man, I'll send you some pictures after this of what.
Yeah, definitely do.
Again, it's like huge mountain ranges, you know. I think for me, I love being in those places where it makes you feel kind of pretty small, and you're in an overwhelming place. It kind of, you know, is quite I don't know, grounding in a weird way. I don't know if that's the right word, but you know, you just feel a bit like. you know, wow, we live in an incredible place. You know, obviously, when you're in this, I love cities as well, but you're in the fast paced city, hustle and bustle, and it kind of every day blends into one, and you're chasing certain things, and you're working, and you're doing this, and then I think when you go out to those locations, it's like, oh, you know, it's pretty special.
I completely emphasize what you're saying. Like when I was in, like prime one that I can think of is Morocco or Kyrgyzstan, riding across those countries and just being in the middle of buttfuck nowhere and just just feeling tiny.
Yeah,
that's what it was. It's feeling really small, and I really love that feeling of feeling, you know, the size of a shrimp.
Yeah, I don't know what it is. I just think it makes you feel really appreciative. That could be me. It might just be how I feel in those situations. But you know, when you're there, you're just like, I don't know. It puts everything into perspective, really.
I completely agree with you.
Weird, but yeah.
I honestly know what you mean.
Yeah.
So this might be what, I don't think I've pre-warned you on this. So what I do at the end of every podcast, is I ask for 5 tips or hacks, life tips, life hacks, whatever you want. They can be cycling related, general life related, cooking related, anything. 5 things.
Okay, cool. So 5 things, yeah?
Yeah.
So anything. Okay.
Anything.
All right. Should I go cycling first?
Yeah, go for it.
I'll do a couple. Like cycling, I think we've obviously had a massive influx of people wanting or like getting into cycling, obviously with Corona or like COVID-19 and stuff. Mm-hmm. And I would just say, like, stick at it after this is all over. And one thing for me when I got into cycling was I was terrible eating, absolutely terrible eating. And
yeah.
I think I've been in a hole so many times from not eating, and I've learned to remind myself to eat. So I think eating whilst riding is a key thing. It probably seems extremely obvious, but for new cyclists, that's a big thing. What other tips have I got? So that's one. Life-wise, I would say that, like, again, given the current situation that we're going through, if you are thinking about doing that thing that it might be a bit risky and you've been thinking about it for a time, for years and whatever, and now might be the time to take a plunge, just go for it. You know, that's what the position that I was in when I kind of started social media. Mm-hmm. And I think that if you're passionate about it and it's something that keeps you up at night and gets you up in the morning, just go for it. That's how I feel about what the decisions that I made and it kind of turned out okay for me. Don't quit your job, obviously. A lot of people ask me that. They're like, oh, did you just quit everything and start it? No, I had a full-time job along the side of doing what I do. I'd say just go for it and follow what you're passionate about and give it a go. Otherwise you might be regretful. So mm-hmm. That's it. Man, this is hard.
It is hard, isn't it? That's why I did 5 as well.
Yeah. What else? Cycling-wise, I would also say, you know, I said this in one of my videos, actually, like, I'm super getting into numbers and stuff like that now as I'm, I guess, learning more about cycling. But mm-hmm. Just have fun. Just go out with mates and ride. And sometimes, you know, don't bring your GPS with you or whatever, just go out and ride and have fun. It doesn't always matter. Obviously I'm very much into that side, but I think it's good to remember why you got into it in the first place. And I think riding with friends and sharing the passion of cycling is something that's an amazing thing. That's number 3.
Yeah.
Number four, this is to all the people who are, I'm going to take it to cycling again. This is to all the people that are fair skinned like myself. Remember sun cream when you're riding in different countries that are hot, or in the UK when it's summer. I've been burnt so many times. It's unbelievable.
I'm that person.
So I'm honestly super fair. So sun cream is key. These are probably super lame tips, but yeah. Is that 4 or is that 3?
That's four.
Okay, last one. Let's make it a good one. What's another good one? Oh man, this is, I like this. It's tough. It's getting me to think. Blimey. Let's go for, let's go for, please follow the rules at the moment. This might be a cop-out one, but please follow the rules at the moment. Don't ride with a group, whether you're cycling or you're just chilling on the beach. Just let's get through the situation that we're in and try and stick together and not ruin it for everyone else in terms of cycling or just the whole lockdown period. And I hope everyone is dealing with it and getting through it and stuff like that. Like, that probably
would be a whole massive don't be a dick,
isn't it? Pretty much.
Yeah. I feel like a recurring
Oh mate, do you know what? I'm gonna listen back to this and think like, oh, I should have said that and I should have said this. But I like that I've been put on the spot.
That's part of the challenge of it, mate. And then what we'll do is we'll do another one at some point in the future and we'll do a second crack at it.
Yeah, definitely.
And then we need to also at some point plan our, when all the lockdown calms down, is plan a big ride as well. We've been talking about it for ages.
Yeah.
Just haven't done it.
Definitely. Yeah, for sure. No, I'm excited, man. I mean, that would be great. Yeah, and thanks so much for having me on. Yeah, I appreciate you asking me.
Thank you so much, Steve, for your time. You are a legend, as always. And say hi to the dogs and the wife from me.
Yeah, I will do. Yeah.
And I will talk to you soon. Yeah. Thank you very much.
Yeah, appreciate your time, mate. Thanks for having me on.
Cheers.
Cheers, bro.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams Super Sale and get 40% off paints and stains August 8th through the 14th. With prices starting at $29.39, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your interior or exterior, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store or shop the sale online. Delivery available on qualifying orders. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.